Collins are in attendance. On today's agenda, we have Senate Bill 268, Regulation of Air Carriers, SR 23, raising the highway speed limit to 65 miles per hour, Senate Bill 265, boat numbering, accidents, and safety. For the record, show that Senator Fahrenkamp and Senator Abood have joined us. First order of business will be the Senate Bill 268, Regulation of Air Carriers. We heard this last week, and there was a request to have the Department of Commerce here for some questions. Becky, would you like to step forward here? Welcome to the committee. Say your name.
My name is Becky Bear. I'm legislative liaison for the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. The department supports this bill. Do you need a section of it?
No, we've gone through it. Okay. Becky, the main reason that we have you here is there were some questions raised in committee, and I just want to make the department available for some answers. Are there any questions of the department at this point?
Well, I think that Mr. Chairman, I think that the question that was asked was the posting. Was it not the posting of the certificates, in the aircraft, i.e., versus where you were going to post them in the jetways? How about the small carrier that's got four or five places? Is there a How are you going to post a certificate, Becky? I guess that's what.
Well, the reason that particular section was written as it was are for instances like Alaska Airlines, where they may have different, where they have a fleet certificate, and yet they may have a plane that, for instance, is flying primarily California routes that they bring into Alaska, and we don't have to stop the whole thing, but they go find the certificate and post it there. So by posting in the jetway, then it would be possible for them to fulfill their qualifications and yet not have to try and say, okay, has this aircraft been here? Does it have a certificate on it? On the smaller planes, I would assume in the airport would be sufficient, or in at any place in the plane that they can do that. That really hasn't been too much of a problem with our smaller aircraft.
What about the aircraft that the charter office say down here, right here in Juneau? And they're flying all over picking up passengers at off the beach and everywhere else. There won't be any certificate showing to the people getting on the airplane unless it's on the airplane until they get to their destination.
Right. So they have
Is
the
that
option.
All right?
Yeah, they have the option of putting it on the aircraft itself. Also.
All right.
We just want to make sure that at some point it is visible to persons so that they know.
Is there more than one, Chairman? Is there more than Becky? More than one certificate issued? So there is proof, I think it was brought out, is there proof if you have a small commuter service between Galena and Tanana on Fairbanks, that their boarding area or their loading area, why that there would be proof of compliance of the insurance?
Yes, we can offer duplicates on that, okay. Or they can also handle
that. That's the way you handle that. I have no problem.
Senator Boot?
Yeah, personally, Mr. Chairman, if one of those guys got to pick up somebody off the beach, they'd have care less about it.
Yeah, although they will care in case there's an accident, there's no liability insurance.
I have no problem.
Senator Kelly.
On the fiscal note, now, somehow it's going to cost us money, right?
At the present time, we charge per plane. However, that does generate more income than it takes to administer the program. What the air carriers approached us on was, we'd like to make the fee fair so it only covers the cost of what it costs you to administer the program, which we agreed with them was fair. So that is why there is a minus in the income, because yes, we will generate less money. But I think this is in keeping with the general trend toward making things self-sufficient, and that which overpays should not overpay.
Well, we have a problem there, of course, because an outfit like the Marine pilots can't possibly, 91 people can't possibly pay for their regulatory status. What was the figures we got?
$32,000
a year. That would be about $2,500 each if those people were expected to pay for their industry. You know, we all pay fees to register our automobiles every year, and I'm sure that that comes to a great deal more than we spend on motor vehicles in this town. So I don't know if I buy that. I don't know if I buy the philosophy, that an industry that's regulated should pay its own way and then shouldn't pay, and shouldn't pay any more than its own way. But I also don't buy the belief that the guy who flies one plane out here registers his plane for $50 and Alaska Airlines registers their whole fleet for $50.
I think the difference is that with those who run multiple planes, they buy a fleet insurance. And so we get one certificate from their insurance company showing that they have covered their fleet. One of the things we get into right now is they drop one, they send us a new thing, they drop us, and they add one, they send us a new thing. And what happens is we actually get into shuffling a great deal more paperwork because they're doing it individual plane by individual plane. If they buy a fleet certificate of insurance and we issue it to them one time, then they're not always coming back to us on drop, add. And so actually it makes a lot less work for us, and it actually makes it cheaper for us to administer.
Chairman. How many aircraft are you talking about a year?
Oh, my God.
What?
Oh, my.
In
436 aircraft?
436 aircraft we had as of March 25th, 1987, and we expect that there'll be 200 to 250 that will be complying before the end of the fiscal year. So we're talking about upwards of 700 aircraft. That comply. Now they had those that don't comply too.
And these are commercial, right?
Huh?
These are commercial.
These are commercial, right? This is if you're flying for hire, do you have the liability insurance to cover in case there's an accident?
Well, let's take it out of the aircraft industry and put it down into an automobile.
Mm-hmm.
I have three cars. Mm-hmm. I have to pay a license on every cotton picking one of them. I'd like to get a kind of blanket deal where I get $50 for all three of them. Maybe I don't know.
Maybe.
But I have got to hold insurance on all of them on a blanket policy or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Now the public itself is contributing to this, to the economy to that extent.
Mm-hmm.
Yet our aircraft carriers that make that are making money, if you will, we just use it for pleasure most of the time.
I think.
And then how does it compare with what the public is? That an altogether different ball game, or?
Well, it's a different.
I imagine it is, but I'm
are
just
you for
bringing
her?
It up. What?
Are you for her?
My what?
Are you for her? Are you commercial?
Yes.
Betty, center fair again.
Yeah, I'm a flyer.
Sorry,
there's your white button, your Mr.
Chilton. No.
You got a question to me.
Yeah, I'm a flyer.
My question was answered through the discussion on
okay.
The
all right.
Switchy swappy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the opposite corollary to that is should we allow Hertz and Avis and National to license their whole fleet of rental cars in the state of Alaska for $35 registration fee for one?
Sure. Everybody's missing the point. This is a certificate of insurance.
Right.
This is not a license. This is a certificate of insurance. And if you have a fleet, you buy an insurance policy for a fleet, all they're doing is issuing a certificate that you have insurance.
But nonetheless, the bottom line on the bill is this is going to cost the state revenue that we have been receiving in the past. Yes, it is. You can't register for an insurance certificate this year at $50 per airplane, for 700 airplanes, and then next year all of a sudden go $50 per fleet and not have it cost us serious money. It doesn't work that way.
Is it going to save us money, Becky?
No, there is not. Let's see, in FY88 it'll be $19,000 less that comes to the state of Alaska.
I know the revenue now, but what about, you mentioned that the cost of.
Yeah, we do not have a person full-time committed to handling the insurance. That person does other things. And so what happens is actually the share of that person's time that is involved in issuing the fleet certificates is going to be less because we're not shuffling back and forth, and the revenue generated will cover the cost of paying for that position and the paperwork and all that.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Chairman. Senator Tuggum, you ready to move it? Any further questions?
Nobody else.
All right, is anybody else like to testify? All right.
Mm-hmm. Close the public hearing.
Committee. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 269 to committee with individual recommendation to ask unanimous consent.
That's 268.
268, Senator. Excuse me. Hearing no objections, sir.
All right, SR 23, raising the highway speed limit to 65 miles per hour.
Let's move it out.
Sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, as the sponsor, as the co-sponsor of it, it's straightforward. I believe that SR 23 is necessary to send a clear message to the governor and the Department of Transportation that they do everything possible to increase the speed limit to 65 on these applicable state highways. Past time that a realistic speed limit be put into effect in certain areas in Alaska, and your support for 23, we wholeheartedly endorse it.
Are you ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman?
I am.
Mr. Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we pass out of committee SR 23 with individual recommendations.
I'm going to object so I can make my opposition statement.
All right.
Just make it pretty clear that when you increase the speed limit, you increase the number of deaths and accidents. So I'm going to oppose the bill.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Farrakhan.
I would ask the other committee man if he adhere to the speed limit as presently posted, but I won't.
We do have DOT here. If there's someone here to answer any questions. Sorry if it passed on. You ask unanimous consent.
Yes, ma'am.
There's an objection to the unanimous consent.
I would throw the objection to passing it out, but I will
object just for a question. I'd like to know the position of the Transportation Department. Could we ask that?
All right.
You want to sign that, then?
Thank you, Senators. My name is Lauren Rasmussen. I'm the Acting Director of Operations and Standards and Headquarters here in Juneau. Position of the department is outlined in the position paper. We are in favor of changing the speed limit from 55 to 65, but you must recognize that we have a federal partner in this, and we have asked the Department of Transportation whether we would qualify and what the steps are, and we're presently waiting that response. We do not know. As you know from your reading the newspaper, it was recently passed in the Surface Transportation Act for rural interstates. Our interstates are designated only. There are substantial differences, and we need to get that cleared up with them before we can actually go out and post it. There are several things that I'm sure that, since you're on the transportation, that you're well aware of that would be affected out there, besides just going out and changing the speed limit signs. As Senator Kelly mentioned, the concerns over raising the accident rate. And also, there are several engineering studies that need to be done in order to raise it to 55. For instance, checking the line of sight distances, the passing sight distances. Those kind of things need to be changed and looked at before we change the speed limit signs. And some things like clear zones, how much clear zone, how much guardrail is actually needed for the different places. So there is substantial cost in raising it to 50 to 65, and some things that we need to do before we'll be allowed to do that. Yes, we did put a fiscal note.
How much?
Well, they don't expect to raise all of them.
We don't expect to raise them all. Obviously, the routes that we would look at are the parks and out the Alaska Highway first, and the ones that are on the designated routes for the interstates, which is down to Seward. From Seward to Anchorage, from Anchorage to Fairbanks on the Parks Highway, and from the Parks Highway down to Tilk.
Chairman. We had 65 miles an hour on those roads that you speak of before that the federal government came up with 55 miles an hour, and all we've done thus far is make those highways nicer and better and wider. So why have we got to spend a lot of money studying?
Senator, many of those roadsway do not meet present standards or even the old standards for 65 mile an hour speed. And quite frankly, sometimes the passing sight distances, those are something we need to check, because there were lots of no passing sight distances in the old one, and we would need to check that before we change it to 65. After all, cars travel considerably faster, and you have shorter passing sight distance. And if we didn't go out and check them, we'd have a substantial liability out there.
Anything further? All right, thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Is your objection withdrawn? Are you withdrawing your objection, or do you want to show a hand?
Well, I'm going to make, I've heard this said on the floor of the Senate. I think it's absolutely true that changing the speed limit from 55 to 65 is a serious policy question that should be decided by the whole legislature, not a simple resolution that's been introduced, what, 2 weeks ago? I think it's a more significant policy question than that. And I think this is the wrong way to go about it. Besides that, I'm not convinced
that raising the speed limit from 55 to 65 is in the best interest of the safety of the people in this state.
Well, I believe that, you know, we're talking about where it's applicable and after a study, and we're not talking about going 65 down here to Thames, out here to Thames. Like we're 65 out here on the even freeway, expressway or whatever.
Used to be what you could do.
I think we're studying, and that's, if you're looking at it, that's what we're saying.
That's not what we're saying. We're asking to immediately raise the maximum speed limit.
In those.
That's what the resolution says on line 19. That's about a significant policy call.
That may be safely traveled at the increased speed.
To immediately raise the maximum speed limit.
All right.
And all they're saying is that we'd have to do some study to determine what those areas would be, and they're saying that's going to cost money. Is there a fiscal note with the bill?
Yeah. That's what they put on.
Well, it better have a finance referral.
Mr.
Chairman?
I'm wondering whether or not that we ought to wait for the federal. Where do you go? When do you think that, are we making any kind of inquiries or progress with the federal government to find out exactly where we stand on the 65 mile an hour
increase? Senator, I really don't know what time we would be able to get a response.
So are you working on it?
Oh, yes, yes, we asked them, yes.
I'm so sure maybe you ought not wait till we find out what we can or can't do before we pass something like this that tells us that we want to do it. I'm really kind of concerned about it. I really am.
Mr. President.
And what you're doing, if I may finish. And what we're doing also is making mandatory a seatbelt law by raising that speed limit.
What?
I think that's what the result is going to be.
Oh, we got a better bill.
I still have my objections.
Then we so move. I think, Mr. Chairman, I think that we ought to move it out. I think that we ought to take the signal to them. I think we ought to take it to the floor. I don't think that we ought to wait. I think that we're in a position where we can certainly send the message to the department, send the message to the governor, that this house of the legislature feels that we should go forward with it and that we should keep from having paralysis by analysis.
Well, in view of the $250,000 fiscal note, do you think it should go to finance?
It's going to finance. It goes to finance, sir.
Doesn't it? I don't see
it. Mr. Chairman, I remove my objection to moving it out of committee.
Are you moving?
I've never withdrawn the motion.
Oh, you have it? Oh, okay.
I don't object to moving the bill out, Mr. Chairman. I oppose the bill, but I do think that we ought to recommend it to the Finance Committee with a $250,000 fiscal note.
Make that part of the motion that goes to the finance? Or what's
your
feeling?
I'll be happy on my own to the attention of the finance chairman. They haven't missed one yet.
They haven't missed a fiscal note yet, Mr. Chairman, but young Binkley will pick it up in a hurry.
Yeah, but what interest do they have in roads? They could very well miss this one.
Well, I'll be happy to have a friendly amendment, if you will, that the chair bring to the attention of the finance committee if there is a fiscal note.
All right. Any objections? Hear no objections. So ordered. All right, next time about 265, boat numbering. Access and safety.
And
sponsors here.
Mr. Chairman, I introduced this bill. There is a companion bill that was introduced first on the Senate side, or on the House side. It's House Bill 94, and Representative Taylor was the sponsor, and that bill is currently in rules. And with one exception, dealing with the TBT-based marine antifouling paints and coatings, the bills are identical, and we did prepare and submit to you a substitute that would include those two changes that reflect, so it would be the same as the House. It's kind of an interesting history on this bill. What it does would do is to set up a system of boat registration and provide for boating safety program in Alaska. You're going to be hearing today on the details of this from both public safety, from health, education, social security, that or HESC, because they handle the emergency medical service, and so they're very interested in the bill, as well as the Coast Guard and the harbor masters. And I introduced this really at the behest of the harbor masters, who, with the increase in recreational boating and small boats, are having a major problem in the keeping track of abandoned boats, of boats that are involved in accidents and so on. So you'll be getting a lot of input on it. The Coast Guard has met, I know, with a number perhaps of you, and certainly with legislators. They've offered to work with the legislature on this. They're committing personnel, also the systems that they have, and that's their computer system and assistance in getting this program going, and they've been very much supportive of it. But again, Alaska's the only state that does not have a system like this. Currently, the Coast Guard registers documented vessels and some of the smaller vessels, but it doesn't enforce the program on smaller boats. I know I've had my little 16-foot runabout registered. They caught me with the different boats I've had, and I send it in, but I've never put my numbers on my boat. Nobody's ever come and said, hey, you ought to do that, or really ever told me that the minimum equipment that you need on that boat is such and such. I worry about that, particularly now that with the young people that travel in the boat. There would be a fee structure on this, plus some federal funds that would fund the program. So you'll see there's a fiscal note there, and I question that a little bit because it shows general fund dollars, but the general fund dollars would be backed up by a system of fees so that there would not be a direct going into the permanent fund. You'd have program receipts to deal with. According to the Coast Guard, Alaska has the highest boating fatality rate in the nation, about 40 times the national average. I think there were only two other states that had a couple higher, and that was, I don't know, Texas and possibly California, but we had 70 people killed in recreational only boating accidents in 1985, and that's apart from the fishing industry. So I would say that there's a couple of major areas. One is the whole tracking question. The other one is the boating safety rate that we have. And I know there'll be some concerns about here's more government, we're getting in again yet one more system, and you'll have to certainly consider that, but I think there are some compelling reasons that for the legislation. We are into recreational boating in great numbers. We do have people who are very careless. We have a good Coast Guard auxiliary program, but they have been underfunded and understaffed and have difficulty in reaching the people that they need to be working with. So I hope that you'll have good consideration of this, and I know you'll be having expert testimony. And with that, I will leave you to the experts, but I would work certainly with you on any information you might need.
Mr. Chairman, one thing bothers me. I know boating safety is important and having the right things, but you're not saying that licenses these boats and make everybody go to different numbers and put them on is going to keep us from having accidents, are you?
No, absolutely not. If it has to be through programs, obviously, information that gets out, the Coast Guard handles mainly larger boats off the coast, and many of the problems that we have are in the recreational class, both the ones that are in the the coastal waters, but also inland waters. And putting the numbers on doesn't do it, but it would help to have just basic information made available to people about the minimum kinds of things that they ought to have in their boats. So, yeah, just the numbers won't do it.
What fee structure do you see on the boat tags that go on your boat?
I would prefer to see that estimate made by some of the people that will be testifying. And if it's not available, Senator, I'll see that information is made available.
I just want to know how we got the income of $515,000 without knowing what the fee structure is going to be, and I'm interested in seeing what we're charging.
Yeah, if you could direct that to public safety. If you don't get the answer, I'll get that for you.
Thank you.
Don't anticipate that you'll be acting on the bill today, so if there are any questions, well, I'll have staff here and we'll follow up and get that information. Senator?
Okay. Senator Sturgis, do you know how long the federal dollars will be flowing in for this program?
Well, they're always, that's always a question as to their continuation. The Coast Guard, I think, could tell us. I think we're fairly well assured for 3 years. It's through 1988. So, yeah. All right, fine. All right, fine. Thank you very much. I shall leave it to you. Did you got your sheet of people there?
All right, next, John Manning from Department of Health Service.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is John Manning. I'm with the Emergency Medical Services Section, the Department of Health and Social Services. The department supports this bill primarily for the boating safety aspects. In 1985, there were 114 deaths due to drowning. The majority of these were boating-related accidents. This was not an isolated bad year. Consistently over the past 10 years, drownings in Alaska have far exceeded the national rates. In fact, the overall drowning rate is probably about 6 times the national rate. For information, I brought some charts that were prepared by Department of Epidemiology on major causes of death in Alaska. And if you'll see that the dark blue under injuries are drowning injuries, and you can see it's a major portion of deaths that are due to unintentional injuries or accidents in Alaska. And on this chart showing shows native and non-native and various age groups, you can see that drowning is a major cause. In this chart, it's the dark green of very many different age groups, from the youngest to the oldest. As I said, the division is primarily interested in the safety aspects of this bill. As we understand it, it would allow approximately $200,000 to $250,000 in federal boating safety funds to come to the state, which the state is currently not eligible to receive since it does not have a Boating Safety Act. In addition, this bill would institute regulations on boats on interior waters are not currently regulated under Coast Guard rules, and require them to have on board a minimum of safety equipment. And if you have any questions, I have to say.
John, what we have a committee substitute that's been put before us that addresses this TBT thing. Do you feel that's getting out of the line of voting safety here?
Well, I'm familiar with the substitute. I think that is primarily that was more of a environmental type of issue that the TBT was, rather than strictly boating safety.
Boating safety.
There are hazards for individuals and applying that kind of boating, that bottom paint and so on. But it's not strictly boating safety.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senators, my name is Commander Darrell Waldron. I'm the commanding officer of the Marine Safety Office in Juneau, and I'm also responsible for boating registration for the state of Alaska. This is Jeff Harbin, who is the chief of the Boating Safety Division in the 17th Coast Guard District. The Coast Guard strongly supports this boating registration and boating safety bill for several reasons. Since 1972, all states have enacted a boating safety law and registration provision, except Alaska. All states have a boating registration program, except Alaska. All states receive federal funds for boating safety education and enforcement, except Alaska. States with a boating safety program have experienced an average of a 30% drop in deaths, although those states have experienced more than double the number of recreational boats. The death rate from recreational boating accidents in Alaska continued to rise. In 1985, it was a total loss of 70 Alaskans, which is over 40 times the national average based on the number of boats in Alaska. And this is high considering that we only have about a five-month boating season. A misconception is that most of these boating accidents do occur in the coastal waters, but actually a very large portion of them occur in the inland waters of the state where there is no Coast Guard either jurisdiction or enforcement activities. As you well are well aware, Alaska is a large state, and the amount of Coast Guard that's spread over it is very small in relative terms. Since there is no enforcement authority by state public safety officers at present, the only enforcement of any kind of regulations is by the Coast Guard. To illustrate this, made up a chart that got wet over the last hearing, but this shows the deaths that have occurred and where they have occurred in 1985 and 86. In the previous years, before 1985, records were not well kept. The coordination between the state troopers and the Coast Guard was not as good as it should have been, and a lot of deaths were going unreported. We've made a substantial effort over the last 2 years to identify these deaths and where they've occurred. As you can see, an awful lot of them are in the interior areas where we have no jurisdiction.
Approximately 70% of the deaths are in the inland areas where we just don't have the jurisdiction or the enforcement.
Would this bill give you that jurisdiction?
No, sir. It would not give us jurisdiction. It would give state law enforcement, it would give a law requiring things like life jackets, which are not required now in the state of Alaska, or lights, or any kind of life-saving equipment. And there is none required in state waters, only in federal waters. For instance, we had a call from the Chilkoot State Park a few weeks ago inquiring about what requirements would the Coast Guard have for a vessel operator carrying passengers for hire in Chilkoot Lake in Haines. And our answer was none. There's no requirements for life jackets, no requirements for fire extinguishers, licensed operators, nothing, because it's the state waters.
Is there anything that tells us what the cause of the accident was, if it was equipment or if it was alcohol or...
We don't have those statistics, so we know some are caused are alcohol related, but some are also related to the lack of equipment on board. Either people not having the proper equipment on board, no life jackets on there. There's records of whole families being lost because there were no life jackets on board. Or even if they were on board, they were not on, they were put on improperly. The lack of education in the interior is part of the bill that we want to reach these people, and this is what we're trying to do. And the Coast Guard, through the auxiliary, who teaches safe boating along the coast, we can use these people to train the trainers on in the interior so that they can spread the correct things and the correct safety procedures around.
Senator Falcon, don't you have jurisdiction over vehicle or vessels for hire? Don't you have, like, Senator Binkley's tour here on the Chena River and the barges. I know you folks inspect all of our barges.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cockhill, yes, sir, that is correct. the areas that are navigable waters of the United States, like the Yukon, like the Nenana, those are navigable waters, and we do have jurisdiction. But we have no Coast Guard up there other than the few times a year that they go up to inspect those vessels. There are state law enforcement people that are up there, but they have no authority to enforce any of the laws because their state does not have a law.
No. It's Coast Guard jurisdiction. I understand that. But,
yes, sir.
But I've been wondering about the Chilcat or the Chilcoot.
The Chilcoot Lake is a state waters. It's not navigable.
Well, what do they do?
Sir?
I thought that there was a federal court decision just now that those streams and lakes were navigable.
No, sir. It has to show historical navigation and deemed by our Coast Guard attorneys whether it is navigable or not. That area is not.
I see. Okay. Senator Farragut.
Mr. Chairman, concerning this, it's the figures that were quoted about misplacement of paper, the Alaska rate versus the national rate concerning deaths, did anyone ask the question as to the number of boats per capita percentage here versus the national rate?
I don't have the figures on boats per capita. The state of Alaska, we register around 30,000 boats, and we have another 13,000 that are out of registration, whether they've been sold or sunk or whatever, we don't know. And we estimate there's another at least 20,000 that are unregistered, either in state waters or in coastal waters that are not presently registered. So around 50,000 boats for 500,000 people is what our rate is here. The only two states that had more boating deaths were Texas and California, which one had 72 and one had 76 deaths. But one of those states has 900,000 boats and the other one has, I think, 800,000 boats. National average is 6.1 deaths per 100,000 boats. Based on the number of registered boats we have here, our rate's over 200 deaths per 1,000 boats.
Can I get that repeated? Is that 6.1 deaths per 100,000 nationally?
Yes, sir.
And in Alaska, it's 200 deaths per 100,000?
Yes, sir, based on the
number of registered boats.
The 30,000 registered boats that we have and 70 deaths.
Oh. When you say registered boats, what sizes are we talking about? Are there some that aren't registered here under a certain size that would be in other states?
The federal law requires any motorized boat to be registered that is not documented. Commercial fishing vessels that are over 5 tons or any commercial vessels that are over 5 tons are required to be documented. Otherwise, if they are operating in the coastal waters or in the federal jurisdiction, they have to be registered.
But is that the 30,000 you speak of?
That's the 30,000, yes, sir.
So
that's what we have registered.
You're talking 200 for 30,000 boats, but you're not considering either the unregistered boats that are not documented.
Yes,
that
sir.
Could be 200,000 boats.
It could be, but yes, sir.
Well, 150,000 boats. Go down the Kenai River fishing some weekend, I'll show them to you.
Our best estimates, and conservative estimates, are around 50,000 boats for the state, yes, sir. 50,000.
I guess this still bothers me a little bit. You know, I'm not against the safety program or any of that. It falls along the same line as what I asked Senator Sturz-Lusty. We have some rather, shall we say, interesting rivers to try to navigate that change each time. So the kind of the statistics on our creeks and rivers kind of bothers me a little bit, and that, and particularly when we're not taking into account numbers of boat per capita as well in our figures. Lord knows the number of accidents is terribly high, and I hope that we can cut it. And so I just like to see when statistics are quoted that gives a true picture of everything.
Well, you could, Mr. Chairman, Senator Farragut. You could show the statistics as being the number of deaths per capita in the state. You know, we have almost the same number of deaths as the state of California with 26 million people. And they have a longer boating season certainly than we do.
Yeah, they do, but they don't have quite as many people boating, apparently speaking. you know, everybody's brother around here has a boat, whether they've ever run one or not, get out in it and try it, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Right. Right.
I hate running one. Yeah.
You're on the same wavelength, huh?
Okay. Any further questions?
Senator, there was a question earlier about how the physical note was obtained and what charges for registration. When the physical note was done, it was based on an average amount charged to other states, which was $10 per year on a three-year registration basis. Presently, the Coast Guard charges $2 per year on a three-year registration basis. And our fees have not changed since the law was written 20 or 30 years ago and has not kept up with the times. Other states charge anywhere from $1.50 a year up to $700 per year for various size vessels. So $10 is deemed to be a reasonable fee.
I can tell you, Mr. Chairman, in the state of Florida, registration fee for 16-footers is $12.
First-hand information.
What's the likelihood that the federal government will stay with the program, with funding the program?
Mr. Chairman, I have no guarantees on that. The funding for the Aquatic Resource Trust Fund, which this money comes from, is based on a marine fuel tax, which is not going away. The marine fuel tax, from my understanding, brings in about $100 million per year, of which only $30 million of it, is presently being set aside for the boating registration and safety program, or $40 million. It's a portion of that which goes to the Coast Guard to fund its boating safety, a portion of the program. I've read articles on both ways that there is a strong push to increase the amount of, because it has been a program that has shown to save 30% of the, has reduced the death rate by 30% in other states.
Mr. Chairman, I might add that even if those funds do disappear after 1988, that with the proposed registration fee that this has been, according to the physical note, that this program can support itself without federal funds.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Boot.
How many troops do you have up in the Kenai-Peninsula area?
We have three. We have
they're
three in Kenai.
Where? Seward?
Kenai. They're...
It would be a bad idea as a suggestion to consider the fact to run a Coast Guard 16-footer or 12-footer or whatever up that Kenai River about once a weekend and keep hollering 6 knots per hour like they do on Lake Washington. And some of these people down there going up and down that river with 300 or 400 boats on them all the time. And it's dangerous. Some of these hogs get in there and they go full bore. They can care less for anybody. And there's no enforcement on the river to speak of. They say, well, that's a Coast Guard problem. And then nothing ever happens. And really, I don't know what one can do. And I know you don't have the manpower to do it. But I believe something has got to be done on that river down there to keep further accidents from happening, because somewhere are going to be some serious deaths down there if they don't cut the speed down on that river. You haven't got to go 100 miles an hour up here, you know.
Yes.
I don't know what to do about it. I don't think you guys do either, because I don't think you haven't got the facilities here.
Yeah.
With this bill, it would provide 11 enforcement positions with vessels, boats, and trailers that would provide that law enforcement authority for the Kenai. Yes, sir.
That really confuses me. Isn't the Kenai River national driven in that state water?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, Senator Fahrenkamp, state waters extend 3 miles out from the state. Those are all state waters. Although they're joint federal waters also, they are joint federal and state. Although we have federal jurisdiction on that, the state also has jurisdiction. We can enforce the federal laws, and if the state did have a law, they could enforce it also.
Well, I just kind of thought didn't look good for it to be on record at this committee that you guys weren't taking care of Kenai River. Unless we put in there, the state's not taking care of Kenai River.
Well, yes, I'd like to clear that up. I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying,
yes,
you talked to a state guy. He says, well, that's the Coast Guard's responsibility. You talked to a Coast Guard. He says, well, that's the state's responsibility. Well, it isn't quite that bad. But there is a conflict in there that it seems like.
I would say that the Coast Guard is the only law enforcement agency has authority over it. As far as responsibility go, I think the safety and welfare of Alaskans is an Alaskan responsibility.
Where's your office in Anchorage?
It's in the federal building on the first floor.
It is. And then you've got one in Kenai.
Yes, sir. It's a detachment out of the Marine Safety Office in Anchorage of three persons.
Where are they headquartered, in Kenai or Soldotna?
They're in Kenai, but I'm not sure where their office is.
Yeah, because we have sometimes got trouble trying to get applications from the Coast Guard to get numbers on your boats and so on. You got to go either there or you got a way to get down to Kenai, and then sometimes...
Yes, sir. Generally, we ship them to post offices and they notify us.
I have no further questions.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Terry Hansen, Department of Public Safety.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Terry Hansen, Special Assistant to the Commissioner, Department of Public Safety. The department has, just maintained its neutral stance on the bill. There is one question that I raised with Senator Sturgalewski before she left, and she had no objections. On page 6, number 8, under exceptions, it says a boat which is not propelled by machinery. And I think we probably have as many injuries, deaths, and so forth from boating accidents that an outboard motor or machinery is not involved. And I'm just wondering if we were going to pass this bill, I think we should include all boats and not making exceptions to boats going down the river. That's because they don't have a motor on them. I think you could run into just as much problem as if you have a 2.5-horse motor on them.
There goes our rat race.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things that's bothered me about this, I've run a river bound for all the years in this country, and you get canoes that get into a water system where you have just a trough that a boat can get through, or in a tight curve, you get in the middle of that thing, and here's canoes that are just, before you can get your weight down, they're flopping all over the place, and you've turned over one or two. So I just, I'm still bothered with some of these statistics, but this I know to be true, and we had a kid drown on the gravel pit that I live on, that they call a lake, and that kid was killed getting out, or drowned, getting out on a piece of cardboard on top of a lake. So if we think this kind of legislation is going to keep us from having access, we're crazy. But it will help if we have some more educational means of teaching some safety. That's why our insurance rates are so high.
That was, Mr. Chairman, that was the only reason I brought it up. It was naturally registration is not going to prevent accidents. But if the bill is passed, I think all boats should be included and not try and start making exceptions.
Right.
Senator Sturgalewski did agree. I checked with her before I said this.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions. The thing that bothers me, I guess, about it is that it's so broad that I can see that if you folks were going to follow the letter of this, that you'd be coming in with about an $8 million budget, because you're talking about boats and small canoes and people in Bethel and Monarch and Quigaluk and Shishmaref and I can just name you and if we're going to do this and we're going to have the proper enforcement, we haven't even got the wherewithal to do the safety programs for some of the others. My position is that I think we're going to have to really study this over the interim to find out just exactly what the impact is, because if I read this bill, it gives you a directive, your agency a directive that's pretty, pretty, pretty strong and pretty broad.
I agree, sir.
And I'm looking at just the fund
You know, when we talk about what you're saying, like no propel, you know, we have this fun program that goes between Fairbanks and Nenana, the River Days Raft Race.
It's canceled this year.
They canceled? Well, they canceled it before, and they'll get everything in gear, and they'll do it maybe once every 3 or 4 years or something. But what I'm saying is that there's, you know, I can see this thing in the duck hunting, my canoe on the duck hunting lake.
I think it ought to be that way.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the main issue on that, as Senator Fahrenkamp stated, is not that we're going to license or register the duck hunting skiff. It's just that you would be then required to have a Coast Guard-approved life vest in that skiff with you, and I think everyone should have.
That's right.
And it would be an more education. But I agree that it may take quite a bit of additional enforcement personnel, or if it were added on to the troopers and fish and wildlife personnel that are in the field right now, it would be just another tack on. If we got time, if we happen to stumble across it, we may enforce this regulation. I do think it's a good bill, but agree with Senator Coghill that we should take a look at it a little further.
Senator Fahrenkamp.
A question, if I might, to the chair. A number of years ago, and in looking at boating safety, it was the impression of those of us at that time in Hess Committee and in Finance Committee that perhaps one of the things that would help the most to bring back down this death rates in boating would be teaching kids in the bush how to swim. And so we built a bunch of swimming pools. Have you noticed any decline in deaths at all from that investment?
Not to my knowledge.
No swimming program? We even took a portable swimming pool around when we built the pools to teach kids to swim, because so many of them are on the boats. They have no idea how to swim. And the cold water, anyway, you know, hypothermia is so.
That really doesn't help teach them how to swim. When they hit that cold water, they can't anyway.
Not very far. Or that sand that goes
through. Any further questions? Thank you,
Jerry. Yeah, one further thing, Mr. Chairman, is that the other concern is, as expressed earlier, is are the funds going to continue, which I know no one can guarantee.
Okay, we have one more. Harbors. Larry Munson?
Munro.
All right, yeah.
My name is Larry Munro. I'm harbor master in Juneau, also president of the Harbor Masters Association of the State of Alaska. We do endorse this bill fully. All harbor masters voted unanimously to endorse this bill when the Coast Guard brought it up to us. In fact, we've been working on it for several years before it was got to you people at all. And our main thing that we'd benefit out of probably is boaters is the registration more than the safety. We're concerned, of course, about the safety, but the registration and the number of boats that aren't registered in any way, they're not documented or registered. They come in the harbors. They're a real pain to find out who owns them. For an example, last summer, there's 31 of them out in Hawk Bay alone. No numbers, no registration, no nothing. You just had to wait to see who got into them to know who they belonged to, and they always belonged to somebody's brother or cousin, or they borrowed it from somebody. So it was a tough way to find out about who owned them and how they registered, or if they were at all. I'll answer questions if I can, but I always like to be brief.
All right.
Don't we have a law in the book now concerning registering boats?
We do with the Coast Guard, but they only, well, for an example, they register the ones that are powered. Sailboats are not powered. They're powered by the wind, and if they don't have we've got them down in Aurora Harbor, they aren't registered with anybody, and they don't believe they have to have numbers on because they're not under power, even though they're worth $100,000. And skiffs, if they can take the engine off them, they figure they don't have to register it. What chance have they got to be caught at it by the Coast Guard without being registered because the Coast Guard is spread so thin? I've always had a soft spot for the Coast Guard for their light budget and their workload. I'm a ex-submarine sailor and 22 years in the Navy. And I had the privilege of being where we were highly budgeted. We didn't hurt for anything, but I've often looked at my Coast Guard brothers and wondered why they even bothered to stay in the service. Because they are, their pay is the same, granted, but their equipment is old, their people are spread far, they stand a lot longer watches than the Navy or any other service, I believe. So they're spread too thin to do a good job, and I think something should have been done years ago about raising the price that people pay for boat registration from $2 a year to something like $10, and maybe they'd have a responsible program. I think the state could run it admirably with $10 registration on each boat above what the federal does on two, and I think that the state would do well to look to the harbor masters for some additional help. I know my people would be glad to help register boats down there and at no additional cost to the state. We're already set up, and if we had the authority, we could register them right now in the Juneau area.
That doesn't clear up my question. I thought we already had a law that says you had to register. Now you said motorized.
The law has been on the book so many years that it's a real sketchy law. Like the $2 price for registering boats, the laws haven't been brought up to par either. And someone with a dugout canoe without a motor on it, I don't think there's any law that would make them register them. And the same law wouldn't make them carry a life jacket or a fire extinguisher or any kind of life-saving equipment or anything else. The guy could go to sea with an oar, be caught in a storm, be gone for 2 weeks with no food, no preparation, no nothing, no way even of making a fire or even a life jacket.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if a guy is stupid enough to do that, he's sure not bright enough to register his vehicle.
We have a lot of unbright people that use harbors, I know for sure.
And we got them that don't use harbors.
If you spot a boat without a number on it, if it's the law and they all had to comply, it'd be like an unlicensed vehicle. It'd be pretty easy to spot. But when you spot them now, you wonder whether they're covered or uncovered under some section of law that says they don't have to register. For an example, a guy could have a powerboat with an outboard on, and as soon as you came along, he could throw the outboard in the back of his pickup, and he's got an unpowered boat, so he wouldn't have to register.
Mr. Chairman, I'm hesitant and reluctant to open up the Pandora box and get into a whole new program. And I think that what we ought to do is that we ought to hold the bill at interim study. Chair will take under consideration. Move we adjourn. Anything further come before the committee today? Stand adjourned.